This is Scott Becker with the Scott Becker Private Equity Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Mark Selko. Mark's the general partner of the Costa Nova Fund, it's a venture capital fund. He's also started various other firms. He's going to tell us a little bit about himself, Costa Nova, what he does, whether Brown or Stanford's a better higher education institution, and a lot more. Mark, can you take a moment? Tell us a little bit about yourself and about Costa Nova.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Scott. Good to be here today. I'm a general partner at Costa Nova. Costa Nova is an early stage software VC firm. We're here in Northern California with offices in San Francisco, where I'm speaking to you from right now, in Palo Alto. And we invest in three things. We invest in applied AI and SaaS, software as a service. That's thing number one. We invest in infrastructure to support today's contemporary computing environment and the massive amounts of data needed for ML and AI. That's thing two. And thing three is fintech, where we're deep as a firm. And we're often first money in, early investors at company formation, seed, or series A. So that's who we are.
When you talk about first money in and seed stage and so forth, what kind of, you know, what kind of size seed funds are you typically looking at?
Yeah. So Costa Nova is on our fourth fund. We've been around about a decade. We're investing out of a $200 million fund. And when we invest in a seed investment round, we typically write a $1 to $2 million check. Could be as small as $500K or up to $3 million, but think of it as $1 to $2. When we're investing in a Series A, it's a $6 to $8 million check. And we're concentrated in what we do. And what that means is, we're going to make fewer bets per fund than a lot of other people who invest at our stages because of our strategy, which is to provide mountains of operating support to fewer companies. That means we staff our firm, not just with investment professionals, but with operating people to help with sales, marketing, and talent. And it also means that we need to make fewer bets so we can actually be helpful. So those are our check sizes, and that's our strategy.
When you talk about the seed capital or seeding a company, million to 2 million, are you typically the only investor, or are you co-investing with other investors? And what does that seed company look like? Is that an idea? Is it already an executive team? Have they already got a product? What does it typically look like when you think of a seed technology company of some sort?
Yeah, there are definitely a few different flavors of seed investing for us. And one flavor is just a founder and an idea, and we incubate the idea and work with the founder. And in some cases, we shape the idea shoulder to shoulder with the founder, help them incorporate, help them hire the initial team, help them build the product and figure out target markets and segments. And that might be a smaller round. I'm working on one right now in crypto insurance. That is, it's going to be a probably a $2 to $3 million check from us, and it's one founder. So that's one flavor. Another flavor is you might consider traditional seed, and that's where there's a small team. The founder and co-founders have been working on the idea for maybe 6 months or a year. There's an initial product. There might even be some kind of alpha or design customers, and that might be a slightly bigger round. And in both cases, you know, kind of flavor one, company formation, flavor two, there's already some evidence of product and customer traction. We like to co-invest with other either seed firms or with angel investors who have knowledge in that market and can open doors or be helpful. And even at Series A, when we're writing the bigger check, we prefer to lead because of our concentrated strategy, but we often don't go it alone. We like to do it with other investment partners.
The limiting factor on some of the companies that get started as seed investments, is it their technology, their idea, their ability to commercialize and sell? What do you typically see as sort of, we have to get through that hurdle? This is our biggest hurdle with this company. Is it typically the sales and distribution side, or is it having a unique enough idea, or are there really unique enough ideas, or is it, What drives, you know, win-lose?
Yeah. Well, you know, we're early stage investors, so maximum risk. And, you know, we believe maximum return for that risk. And so, you know, what does that risk look like? You know, often it's demand risk. These are founders who have ideas that are, in some cases, new products in new markets where you're asking customers to change their behavior because this is a new thing. So obviously the biggest risk there is, you know, big yawn. Customers don't care. They're not willing to change their behavior. But when it does work, you know, which happened in our investments at Alation, which is a data catalog company, or Quizlet, which is a learning tech company, well, they can be massive. And those are both companies, you know, in excess of $1 billion valuation. So new market risk and demand. For our infrastructure practice, sometimes it's technical risk. It's a known problem like cybersecurity, you know, or fraud. And in those cases, the company is doing something that's different, and it has a superior, protective posture or superior technical performance. In that case, we know there's demand, but the product has to demonstrably show that it's superior. And that's a different class of risk and a different kind of diligence. And then the third kind of risk might be known market, not a lot of technical risk, but it's a change to the business model, the way customers buy and how customers adopt the product. And so that's the third flavor of risk. And we're willing to underwrite all three.
You had mentioned looking at an investment in cryptocurrency insurance. When you look at your career now and being at Cosanoa since the second fund, in your wildest dreams, did you think 10 years later or whatever amount of years later, you'd be looking at a crypto insurance company?
Well, I was supposed to be a doctor like my dad. I was one of these wayward pre-meds. So no is the answer. I was supposed to, you know, be seeing patients in a treatment room somewhere in the suburbs. And, you know, I found my way to be an entrepreneur. I co-founded two companies with my best friend, Matt, from Stanford Business School. They were wildly different from one another. The first was a Web 1.0 e-commerce and content company called Baby Center. The second was an enterprise performance management company called Merced Systems. Really different. Both were incredibly satisfying company building experiences. And I'd say the link to being a VC now was I love the idea of idea formation, product building, figuring out how to sell and meet customers where they are. And at Merced Systems, the second company that Matt and I ran, we had really significant financial services customers, like investment management customers like Fidelity and Vanguard, and banking customers, you know, like Bank of America, and insurance carrier customers like Nationwide and Liberty Mutual. So I had worked in those environments and, you know, saw lots of opportunities for new fintechs to create new products and innovate in that sector. And that led me to look at fintech as an investor. And that led me more specifically to look at insurance tech, where I've been really active. And I just think great, huge companies are going to get built. So in a way, that's the connective tissue from wayward pre-med to insurance tech and fintech investor.
I mean, but literally fascinating. Do you find as a VC, as a seed investor, incredibly more skilled at it because you experience yourself in building businesses? I mean, does that give you a much better lens to view things through?
I think it helps in some ways and doesn't help in others. The where it's technical and product risk. And, there's just a feasibility question, like a VC who, you know, is a PhD in computer science or, you know, built products inside that sector is going to be better equipped than me as a generalist. However, I am highly experienced at building and shaping organizations and launching new products and designing product portfolios and figuring out when you need to reinvent your go-to-market. And then, you know, some of the kind of meat and potatoes questions a lot of founders have around how do I build my executive team and how do I shape my culture and when do I decide what subspecialty within each of these disciplines like product engineering, marketing, sales, finance, I need to hire next. I've dealt with all of those issues. And that makes me, I think, a really helpful board member for certain company types. And that's where I focus my time and my energy.
Now, you seem like a delightful person. Do you ever get in a spot with a founder or CEO where the two of you want to kill each other, or does that hardly ever happen? You don't have to talk about it if you don't want to.
We frequently find our way on that journey, but not all the way to kill each other. We, part of being an engaged, helpful firm, you know, we believe is that we're going to share our opinions. And sometimes we disagree with founders. In fact, I view it as my duty to shareholders as a board member to speak up, to be close enough to the company that my opinion is supported by facts and evidence. At the end of the day, I believe, and I feel this way as a former founder, that it is the management team's company. It is the founder's company. And if we have a dispute, we should defer to them. But I'm going to speak up because I think it's my job. And in most cases where we've had disagreements, that constructive tension has led to, I think, better decision making and exposing blind spots. And, you know, most founders are the largest shareholders in their own companies. So, my belief is it benefits them too. But it almost never gets to blows or gets to the kind of conflict where you can't work together. I just won't let that happen. So as long as philosophically, I keep my head on, it's your company, but take my responsibility as a board member seriously. It leads to goodness.
Just fantastic. Mark, I want to thank you for joining us today. What a pleasure to visit with you and hear what you guys do and how clearly you view your mission and what you do. It really makes for great success, I am certain, quite frankly, and you've got a great reputation. Thank you for joining the Becker Private Equity Podcast today.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.